Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Max White. He's the co-owner and director of Varoma Cannabis. Thanks for joining us, Max.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so give us a sense of geography. Where are you located today?
Varoma Cannabis is in the Willamette Valley. We're in Canby, Oregon. We're probably surrounded by about 200 other growers in this area. It's pretty dense. I think it may be the densest area of cannabis cultivation in Oregon. Maybe second to Southern Oregon, Medford area, which is notoriously known for all its outdoor growing.
Wow, that's amazing. You guys all pretty cool with each other?
You know, it's pretty much as it can be, one big happy family.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of networking together and speaking, and a lot of, like I said, growers have ties with each other from free market days and this and that. So it's helpful when we can all communicate together to oversee some problems that come up.
Yeah, definitely. So can you tell me a little bit about Varoma Cannabis?
Varoma Cannabis is a tier two production, which means we have 10,000 square feet of flowering canopy that we can utilize at this facility. Mm-hmm. We are a indoor tier two, which gives us that 10,000. If it was an outdoor tier two, you'd be allowed up to 40,000, which is basically the 4-to-1 rule. For cultivation. We are in what I call a hybrid greenhouse. It's automated. We're on concrete. We have supplemental light. We have about 130,000 watt lights in here to supplement for sun. We are a common shared space. So the light deprivation curtains will block off certain photo periods in that greenhouse so that I can have a veg section, as well as 2/3 of the space is about flowering, so that I can rotate flowering crops monthly in a perpetual harvest.
Oh, very cool. So you're in tier two. Can you give me like some pros and cons, being in tier two as opposed to tier one?
Tier two would be the biggest we can do. So obviously the pros being that you can grow more plants, produce more product. The con being that if you're not financially equipped to be able to take on quite that bite, it's costly to operate the size of production. And if you don't have your efficiencies and some of the things down, you can get drowned if you're not careful by kind of overstepping what you overbiting on. So.
Yeah. So everybody in the cannabis industry, obviously, very passionate, is there something that you feel passionate about that pushes you to keep doing what you're doing or that push you to get into the industry?
Well, as I mentioned, I got my medical card and started being medically active in the growing aspect of cannabis at the age of 16. Mm-hmm. I am 30. How old am I? She's 82. I'll be 37 this year.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, right. Happens 30, quick.
33. I'm at that same level where I'm like, I forget, 33, 33, 34, it's starting to get mixed up in there.
I got to carry the one.
The remainder, what is it?
So, so I've grown for 20 years and I love it. It's, sometimes I compare it to fishing where, I'd rather catch the fish than eat them some of the times, I'd rather grow the plants than smoke them some of the times. Because it's such a wonderful plant to grow. It's so aggressive. And, so that's been my passion is kind of learning all the aspects of it, becoming good at, propagation, bringing a plant from another plant and all those aspects. So that's really what I found so intriguing. And the culture. I love the culture back, now, but it's a little diluted now. I definitely loved, the Wild West aspect of the old days. That was a real community thing, and you lived by your word, and people weren't suing each other, and there wasn't contracts. I'm just kind of learning how to negotiate contracts and deal with all that stuff as of now, which that's a whole nother mess. But But, you know, I loved that aspect of it, and the kind of the danger of it, I guess, a little bit was thrilling, even though I didn't really see it like that. But that's what I love about it, you know, is the growing aspect in the community, I suppose.
That's very cool. So, yeah, I mean, you're talking about the Wild West, and when you're 16 years old, 20 years ago, I mean, how does somebody even break in at 16 years old? Like, do you just go knock on someone's door? Did someone bring you under their wing? Or how do you learn the ins and outs, you know, at that young age?
For the growing aspect?
Yeah.
Well, you know, my dad was a grower. Before I was conceived, I guess the story goes that when my mom met him, he popped outside of his door and shut the door behind him real quick because he had, you know, 50 plants hanging all throughout it. And, you know, he bought his first piece of property with a brown paper bag of money, which, you know, that's interesting stuff, you know?
Yeah. Which you couldn't smell walking up, you know? What's going closing the door going to do?
Oh man, that's the family scent at this point. But, you know, so there's that aspect, but my dad was basic about it. He didn't do any indoor growing. He did outdoor growing, you know, so he allowed me to be able to immerse myself in that culture and learning to grow. So that was enabling. But I did get a subscription to High Times, learned a lot just from going through articles, and, you know, we didn't have, there wasn't any, you know, web forums. You just couldn't as talk about it as much, you know? Yeah. So it definitely was, you'd find people and then you kind of learn how they did it. And, there wasn't as many. So the information I feel was a little more potent back then. Mm. It was a little more sacred in the knowledge. And I guess it wasn't so blown out. There wasn't so many perspectives, but, so that's basically how I learned, you know. I think I picked up the cannabis Bible as well and went through a lot of it. And then a lot of trial and error. I mean, the first grow I had, I scorched them. It was 1,000-watt light in a little 4x4 upstairs in Central Oregon house.
Oh, no.
And, you know, I learned a lot. Can't do that. So, you know, you just lots of trial and error.
Definitely. Now, have you taken anybody under your wing and, you know, and shown them, you know, you have so much knowledge after 20 years, you know?
Well, it's amazing how much you learn by doing that, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, when you bring someone in and you got to explain things, you got to kind of check yourself, like, what is my thought process here? What is the actual, you know, say SOP or operation process? Because I just kind of, I'm not as organized as I wish I would be or have been in the past. It's something I'm working on. But, but that's absolutely part of it right now is because stuff like the word SOP, standard operating procedure, if I'm going to take on different tasks and do the business aspect or the marketing or be out of the garden, I need to make sure that people can read it like an instruction, you know, like baking cookies or whatever.
Yeah.
Love it. So, I have brought in a lot of people and, partnerships and, you know, adventures all along the way. But now it's a little bit more detail oriented now that it's a business.
So, I mean, now that it's turned into a business, what do you see that, you know, the biggest obstacle that you've faced, you know, and how have you been able to overcome it?
Oh man, there's a different obstacle daily.
It's all right. Firefighters, that's what we are a lot of the times.
I mean, from starting this operation, I can say that the greenhouse was initially a challenge because outdoor, you know, I've grown outdoor. That's basic and it can be basic. You can make it complicated, but that's, you know, outside does a lot of the work for you. Indoor, there's formulas for that. For every, you know, 16 or 25 square feet, you have a light. You know, you have all these kind of formulas that have been tried and true, and you have lots of control. So that was kind of done, you know, but bringing that aspect into a commercial greenhouse was different because there was a lot of unknowns, a lot of variables. And commercially growing is just difficult. You have, you know, like I said, 10,000 plants over, you know, 9 or 8 or 12 or whatever it was with medical. You know, I used to name my plants back then, Barbara and whatever, and that was a lot easier, you know, but you're managing a lot at this point. So when you get a problem, you have a problem times 10,000 or whatever, you know. So that's been a challenge, learning how to use a greenhouse tool. IPM is a mother. So I have had everything under the sun with commercial growing here, from russets, root aphids, viroids, pathogen problems. You know, I've had them all, sometimes more than one at a time. And so learning how to really control my environment and, you know, in the free market days, you could use different pesticides that we can't use now, and which ultimately is a great thing for pollinators and for, you know, pushing to be clean with your pesticide program. I think it's a wonderful thing, but it's challenging. And we can't use most of the things that, you know, tobacco farmers or even vegetable or organic vegetable farmers can use. So we are really learning to be preventative and using biologicals and different stuff like that. So that's been a big lesson as well, is being able to manage pests.
Wow. That's fascinating. I love that stuff. So now, but seriously, you know, that's a cool thing, is I get to talk to people from so many different areas. You know, some people, you know, they can talk about the history all day, and some people, they can talk about, you know, the chemistry all day, and, you know, talking about the cultivation is, you know, there's so much focus that can be done within the cannabis industry. And I'm just like, that to me is the most amazing thing. So, you know, being able to, you know, like you talked about pesticides, you can't use that stuff. So, you know, being able to control the environment, to me, I think that's so cool.
It's a lot to balance, you know, and then you add the factor that Oregon, I think people in Oregon rise to the top. I'm biased, but I think Oregon grows the best weed in the world. And I think we are really pushed right now because we had an oversaturation of growers. I think we had, you know, whatever, 1,500 or applications. It was basically three growers to one retail.
Yeah. Right?
So not only do I have to be able to manage my gardens, manage budgets, manage labor, but to be able to produce a wonderful crop at a cost that I can remain competitive in a market that's good at what it does as it is. So that was, you know, we became, in the first year, I went through 30 employees, for instance. Everyone wants to grow weed and wants to be involved in a pot farm, but the honeymoon phase wears quickly when you got you doing labor, you're moving pots of dirt.
Not so glamorous, right? Not as glamorous as people want to make it up.
Yeah, no, I have stolen a few of my employees from neighboring tree farms and stuff, which they're the best.
Yeah.
Because they know what it's like to be out in the field and doing some of these tasks. And anyway, so that's been part of it. We've become 30%, actually it was close to about 40% more efficient over the first year, which is how I think we stayed in business, because I can get the same amount of work done with 10 employees that I had with 30 before. So labor costs have gone down. As well, you know, that basically matched the market at the time, because when I first came on in 2017, late 16, the prices were, we'll say, $1,800 for a pound. Quickly, a year later, it dropped, and our bottom price we were getting was $650 a pound. You know, we have rebounded as a state since, but that's quite the drastic change. You know, if you're in any other market, you know, people are jumping out of windows and shit like that if it crashes.
that's why people, you know, you talk about 3-to-1, and sometimes it's just like, you know, sticking through those downtimes and being able to have a little runway. And, you know, these guys dime a dozen, you know, you can come in, come out, and the people that have been there, you know, doing it for as long as you guys have been doing it, you know, that's how you make it.
A lot of data, a lot of looking at your numbers, which I'm a fan of that stuff. But Oregon went through, I think I heard the number, 60% of the producers went out of business.
Yeah.
In the first couple of years. And I talked to a lot of guys who didn't even know what it cost them to produce a pound or a gram. And without that, it could be a tailspin, not knowing where your margins or where your bottom is. You know, I'd sit inside these dispensaries with my tote to sell some product along with every other grower in the state. And there'd be more growers trying to sell than there were patients or people buying. And I'd listen to them negotiate with the intake managers. And, you know, oh, I got this, you know, super cookies, whatever, dank, da-da-da-da, all the words, organic, all this stuff. And I'm shooting for, you know, $1,500 a pound. And the intake manager wouldn't have to say much. But, you know, well, and then before that, okay, well, how about 12? Okay, I'm 1,000. Before I knew it, they're offering the product for half the price that they started at, you know?
Wow.
And that's unfortunate, because it draws the price. It just crashed the market, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, that's the whole marketing and selling was a whole other
Yeah, battle. Aside from shitty negotiation skills, I mean, yeah, that really, you know, messes up the whole market and, you know, undercuts everybody else, you know. And like you said, they're not even looking at the numbers, you know. So they're just trying to, I don't know, what, get their foot in the door or something. I'm not sure, you know. But
sell product. You hear no too many times in a day, and it's really kind of diminishing. But so is going out of business. So
yeah. And 60%, I mean, I guess sounds high, but I think most businesses go out of business, you know, 80%, I think, is the standard number around there. So,
you know, well, everyone everyone got into it. You were either a really, you were either a grower, and or a lot of people that failed were growers, good growers, didn't have much business sense or, you know, marketing skills, or you're a really good business person, but you didn't have any cannabis background or culture even. I think a lot of people got turned away who were just straight up corporate, knocking on doors to sell.
Yeah.
A lot of people in Oregon were friends of mine who we'd all kind of done stuff together, and then they're maybe managing stores now or intake managers. So now I used to run with them before in the free market. Now it's my buddy down there who's running a store. It's a lot easier for me to walk in these places and sell product than maybe somebody else.
Yeah, no, exactly. So I guess, you know, that's another question. So you're saying, you know, the oversaturation, the 3-to-1, you know, aside from having that network, how does Aroma, and how do you really differentiate yourself from all the other growers out there?
Sure. Well, you know, we are a bigger, you know, we're a tier 2 producer. I don't get to have the care that I would if I had a micro tier, or if I had a small little garden. So, but that being said, price points, being able to offer what I think is competitive product across the board at a good price point, you know. And I work with a bunch of breeders too, so I get to test and trial different seeds that might not be available, or get some exclusivity with different strains. We, you know, for example, one of the seeds we were running, we won the Cultivation Classic, which is a one of the many cannabis award programs here in the state. But we won that one year, and that gave us a boost. You know, it's really just being present in the market, and that's can be a motherfucker. You know,
sticking around, just attrition,
going out there, being kind, being approachable, you know, trying to smile and be able to present yourself and your farm. We are organic. We do compost teas. We have amended soil. We do a lot of these natural approach things. But I quickly found that that didn't really matter as much when there's just so much product. People didn't care if you were a salt grower or what. If it was it had good bag appeal, a good trim job, you know, had some good nose, and it was a good price point. Those were really the factors you needed to be able to move weight, you know. So.
Very good. So, you know, going back, you're talking about the Wild West, you know, and obviously we've made a lot of changes since 98, 99, you know, some good, you know, and like you said, maybe some not so good, you know, where you said it was a lot more fun, you know, in certain ways, you know, but what challenges do you feel that the cannabis industry as a whole feels, you know, still faces today, and growers still face today?
Well, it's progressing, you know. It is a business now, and you need to know your numbers. I didn't know how much it cost me to grow back in the day. The margins were there, so I didn't have to worry about it, you know. I couldn't have a bank account, couldn't have stuff like, or, you know, it was difficult to operate back then, though, with cash and stuff. Today, things are kind of leveling off as far as, you know, what expectations are for yield. I mean, if you look at corn or different crops, they're pretty consistent with the quality you're going to get. They're pretty consistent with the price points they get. So that's kind of homogenized. And I think cannabis is going to do that as well. So brand recognition becomes very important. You know, continuing to keep your efficiencies there, dial in your program, and have consistent results as a grower, and being able to have a market as well, partnerships, like I said, whatever, branding, and be expanding that way.
How do you brand yourself as a grower? You know, I'm not sure, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, is, you know, does, you know, the end user, does he really know who Aroma is? Is he going into the dispensary and saying, you know what, I love Aroma's bud, like that's what I want?
Sure. A lot of people spend a lot of money on branding, and I definitely saw a lot of products being sold that were, in my opinion, subpar. Mm-hmm. But they got, you know, they got this, they're selling the sizzle, not the steak, mm-hmm. so to say. And then I see amazing growers and amazing product that don't have any branding. They're just kind of out there trying to sell. And that's tough, you know. So that's kind of where we were at. I didn't have a budget for marketing. Mm-hmm. Recently started one this last year. So it's important. We do a lot of like pop-ups. So a lot of vendor days. So we're in about 80 stores. And out of those, at least once a month, I could go out and have a deal where I set up an Aroma table, you know, hand out some t-shirts, hand out some lighters and different stuff, some swag.
Everybody loves swag.
All that stuff. And then offer deals on joints, penny joints or whatever, if you buy a gram of Aroma product or different ways of doing that. But really knowing your bud tenders, giving them product, not giving, you know, there's – selling them product and fluffing it a little bit so that all the bud tenders can try your product. And if you do, you're good at your craft, which we do, then they like our smoke, you know, and we get positive results and they will sell your product for you. Wow. And talk about your farm, you know. So it's really about being that point of contact for the end consumer. Is that's your bud tender.
That's so smart. I never thought about that. You know, they really are like the gatekeepers. You know, and you really want to take care, you know, you learn about, you know, people want to cater to the big wigs and all that stuff, you know, but I don't know if you've ever seen Goodfellas, you know, it's all about tipping the doorman, you know, and taking care of them, knowing, making sure they know who you are and having a good relationship with them. So.
Absolutely. You know, they got 200 jars of weed on their shelf.
Yeah.
They're going to forget about most of those, but they're going to remember, you know, hopefully they'll remember what you're doing.
Yeah, my experience is, you know, it's always like go in there and, oh, what are you looking for? And I'm looking for this. And they say, oh, this is what I'm smoking right here, you know? And
exactly.
You know, so definitely there's always something, you know, the top shelf, something that they, you know, that they're pushing as well, you know? And I'm, whenever I take the bud tender's recommendation, I'm happy. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, there's something to be said about having a presence on social media, in particular. I have sold crops out in the past. Before it was even done being harvested, you know, because there was a desire about it as it was growing. I'm showing pictures of it, and I'll have, you know, intake managers and dispensaries reach out to us and say, let us know when that's done. I want X amount of pounds or whatever, you know, so
yeah,
that's cool too. You know?
So cool. So yeah, you know, what can we expect from Max and Aroma Cannabis in the future?
Well, you know, we're pushing for efficiencies. We're pushing for continuing to make this kind of, you know, I don't want to say copy and paste, but being able to put this place to where it's consistent. There's been a lot of fluctuation over the years, but I think the state's starting to get consistent. There's no more grower licenses coming on board. So we'll get this place to where it ops consistently. And then other than that, there's another greenhouse that I am partnering up with that's about 20% bigger than this one. So we're in the building stages of that, which will be easier to build and easier to operate now that we got one of these under our belt, you know.
Yeah.
That will be another one that'll be coming up this summer. In addition, I'm starting a company called Propagation Station, and that essentially is a business that it's a steel building with some greenhouses in a field where I can research and develop strains, do a lot of seed testing, probably a little bit of seed breeding. I'd like to get into the tissue culture, but the whole aspect of that is to be able to sell Aroma and the other farm, as well as my community of farmers that I have. I can sell us all product, because essentially I just think that this greenhouse I have here should only pump out flower. I don't want to have to, you know, propagate and waste space. It should just be a production. So that's the next thing, is being able to sell myself different strains every month, so I can also offer different genetics to my consumers every month, you know, which is hard. I'm taking clones right now in this greenhouse, and those won't be to market till February. Wow. So there's a lot of planning for that. Yeah, you know, and I kind of try and make myself present around the industry here. My son's mother is a lab technician, so she started several testing facilities. We always communicate and kind of keep each other up to date with what's happening in the industry. I'm pretty excited. I get to be flown out to Ontario in a couple weeks, where I'll be speaking at a conference called Grow Up Conference. So that'll be the first one of those I've ever done, and that'll be pretty exciting, and again, for expanding networks.
And you're speaking?
Yeah, I get to speak.
Nice.
Three different days I'll be speaking on three different topics, one of them being IPM and the general ups and downs and struggles and strifes that we've had with that, as well as greenhouse efficiencies, and then a general networking and growers kind of network panel. So that should be a blast. I'm looking forward to that.
That's,
you know, being able to travel, I grow dope, you know, being able to travel and do that kind of thing for it's a dream come true, you know, and sometimes you got to sit back and really count your blessings from the journey you've been on. I mean, you're being pulling hair out and lots of sleepless nights, but just starting to see the light, you know, where, wow, okay. You know, sometimes I'm like, I gotta go get a job at Target or something.
That
but
might
it's all
Target. Yeah, you know, all the skills you've acquired would be wasted. So I'm glad that's not the
It's all leveling out. And they say by 2021, Oregon's put the moves in and poised ourselves to be the first state that will be able to participate in national distribution, which would really open everything up for Oregon, you know, the growers. So I am excited in anticipation of that movement as well.
Very cool. Very cool. So, you know, I don't know how you view yourself. You say that you're a grower, you know, I think you're an OG entrepreneur, you know, been doing this for 20 years. So, you know, I always love to hear every entrepreneur's kind of, you know, mindset of what success is. How do you define success, and what does success look like for you?
You know, success for me has changed over the years, but success for me is being able to offer jobs to good people. I have great employees here that they can make a good living. And I try, before I do, you know, I try and make sure everyone's getting paid well and that there's future for them. Get a business that produces good crops and sells them and creates a good marketplace for that. And being able to have freedom and time. I have a 5-year-old. I want to be able to operate this, but I also want to be able to have a balance of work and family and fun, you know? So luckily most of those are all together. But that would be success. I like the business aspect of it. Now I'm putting projects together. So moving forward, I'd like to continue to put projects together that can employ people, produce good product, and have fun with the cannabis plant.
Yeah. That's so cool. That's so cool. Being a giver, you know, being able to offer opportunities for people. That's a great way to look at it. Is there anything else you'd like to share about Aroma that we haven't already covered?
Kind of check out the site, check out our progress on Instagram. We'll try and put up a website eventually, you know, and look us up. If you're in Oregon, give a shout out and just keep following the journey. We're having a good time.
Cool. Where can we find you?
Our Instagram is Aroma Cannabis, at Aroma Cannabis, I suppose. Mm-hmm. My personal one is at One Eye Max. We're having a good time. Come and join and share thoughts and let's all network and smoke a joint and have fun.
Sounds good. Sounds like a plan. Max, thank you so much again for joining us, and good luck to you in the rest of 2019 and beyond.
Thanks, my man. Hey, take care too. Have a good time with the podcast.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Take care, bub.
Thanks.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis marketing, branding, and web design. If you're a cannabis entrepreneur and you know you need an uptake in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us. Plans start at $248. Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com. That's CalaCann.com, and follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.